Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
The segment that's taken over the world is coming up in our final segment. The best thing that happened today. Has this been sticking around, Bobby? Is the best thing that's happened today, is this a staple that's got some life?
We haven't done it. Have we done it very much lately? I haven't done it this week.
Adriana, best thing that happened today, is that still a thing?
It's not really, but we can still have it be a thing.
All right. Well, it's on the show sheet, so let's do that. We'll do that in our final segment. But the second best thing that happens today is this conversation with Matt Preem. Matt joins us live from Louisville after last night. Ducks, Virginia Ducks fall short. Matt, what a game. What a game. Thanks for taking the time. And what's going to be your first takeaway from this Oregon-Virginia game, a four-point loss for the Ducks?
Missed opportunities. I mean, you could realistically say Oregon had their chances to win this game and to knock off a team that for parts of this year was ranked number one, was a number one seed, and for quite honestly the last 3 years has been probably the best team in the ACC in the regular season. And that's crazy to think about. You know, the Ducks had a lead with about 7 minutes to go in this game. They were tied with about 5 minutes to go in this game. And then they had, I think, four straight possessions in the last three or so minutes of this game, getting clean looks and the shots just not going down. And Dana Altman said post game that, you know, his thoughts were that was his fault, that he felt like guys maybe rushed their shot a little bit. And I kind of thought the same thing. They were kind of going for that home run play. And that's how you lose to Virginia, is, you know, your first decent look, you take it, trying to make the big play. And Oregon did that four straight times and didn't get any of them to fall. And the crazy part about it is, you know, those are the shots that fueled this 10-game run. But you look at this team, and they hung with Virginia, 53-49. They had a lead in the second half at one point. And you look at it, and, you know, there's never positives and losses, in my opinion, in sports. But this game showed that this run of 10 straight was pretty much legit for the Ducks.
Yeah, and they do it with Peyton Pritchard being limited offensively, which we knew going in was a concern given Virginia's defensive prowess and their length. And ultimately, Pritchard finishes 3-for-12 from the floor, Matt, and 1-for-6 from three-point range. And Oregon unable to get to that 50-point mark. I know Virginia was, you know, they led the nation in defense with 55 points allowed on average. So you knew it was going to be tough going in. But over the 40 minutes of the game, what did you make of Oregon's offense, especially with Pritchard not being able to reach his averages that he's been averaging the last 10 games or so?
Yeah, it was pretty impressive to watch Virginia play defense. You know, they completely neutralized the paint, essentially, for Oregon. And you know, a lot of people are, well, why is Kenny Wooten not doing anything? What happened to, you know, the up-and-down play of this team? Is, you know, Virginia's defense is, their foundation is to not allow anyone near the rim. And, you know, the alley-oops were not there. The post moves were not there because they just pulled everybody in from the perimeter and played that pack line defense. And, you know, then on top of that, they are very good defensively in one-on-one positions. And you're right. Their game plan was do not allow the Peyton Pritchard pick and roll alley-oops to Kenny Wooten, and then stay in front of Pritchard and force him to give the ball up and make someone else beat them. And that was their game plan, and it worked perfectly because they neutralized Wooten. He had just one alley-oop dunk. He had one basket in this game. That was a big thing for them because in the previous 10 games, you know, Oregon could run the pick and roll with Wooten, and, you know, the threat of him going over the top opened up a lot of lanes for Pritchard, and then the elimination of Pritchard scoring really put, you know, the pressure on Paul White and Ehab Amin and Lou King to really kind of carry this group. And King certainly did his part. Paul White hit some clutch shots down the stretch. Ehab Amin made some big buckets in the first half, but it just wasn't enough. Oregon needed Peyton Pritchard and the Peyton Pritchard of that 10-game win streak to be there for them to win this game. He just unfortunately got eliminated out of that game.
We're talking to Matt Bream, 24/7 Sports. Matt, you bring up Ehab Amin. Love his energy, love his hustle, love the edge that he plays with. He gets in that scuffle when it's a one-point game, just under 14 minutes in the second half, and ends up flopping to draw a technical foul on Virginia's big man. It ultimately gets reviewed and is ruled a double tech given to Amin as well, which, of course, in college hoops, adds a personal foul. Amin eventually fouls out with a few minutes left in the game. What did you make of that sequence? And overall, I mean, he's a guy that has given this team so many good contributions. But in the second half, he had a couple of negative plays as well.
I never thought I would see a flop that would beat Dylan Brooks at Utah from a couple of years ago. And we got it. That was my first thought was, yeah. Holy smokes. But as funny as it sounds, you know, it was, you know, from an execution of a flop standpoint, it was perfectly done by Ehab Amin. I mean, he got the technical foul called. I thought that both techs were kind of weak. If I were the officials, I would have just sat him over to the side. Hey, cut this out. Let's not do this. Jump ball. Let's go as is, you know, and keep going. That being said, yeah, I think Ehab, you have to credit his play over the last 11 games of, you know, sparking this team and, you know, the runs that he made and his contributions against Arizona State, his contributions against UC Irvine saved, you know, their run, saved their seasons. You know, without him in those two games, Oregon's not playing in the Sweet 16. They're not playing an NCAA tournament. And so I think he took some questionable plays. He took, you know, he made some questionable shot selections. But at the same time, I think if you're Dan Altman, you kind of live with that because it's a guy that's, you know, had a huge impact on this run, and he's a senior. He's playing in the moment, and he's playing well. They weren't, I don't think, really outrageously terrible shots, but at the same time, you would like maybe a better look, but something that you could probably live with.
And for Lou King, playing on a bum wheel, I know he's got finger issues as well. But he really, you know, played his heart out. 16 points, 4-for-8 from deep. I mean, Oregon's not even as close as they ended up being, which was right in the thick of it with a chance to win this game if it wasn't for Lou King.
Yeah, King was pretty spectacular this last, basically since the new year, since 2019 started. His play has been tremendous. So 25 games from early January till now, he scored in double figures in 23 of them. And he was playing at the level now, that you kind of were expecting when he signed with Oregon out of New Jersey as a five-star prospect and one of the greatest players ever to sign with Oregon from a recruiting standpoint. His impact was tremendous, and he's going to be in a tough spot now. You know, I'm not exactly sure what you do if you're Lewis King with his decision afterwards. He told me that he's still a college student. He's still a college athlete. He's undecided. He's going to figure things out later. But at the same time, he's never really been healthy all year. And this is what he's doing. What would a full year of full health be like for him? How much could that stock skyrocket? But if he does go pro and, you know, he gets himself healthy for the combine and for these workouts, he could skyrocket up the, you know, the NBA draft boards just because he's 6'9". He's really long. He can shoot it. He's shown now the ability to play defense. I think that was something that's, you know, not talked enough about his game during this 11-game stretch where they needed to win games in the regular season and a Pac-12 tournament. Now in the NCAA tournament, he's playing good defense now. He has some holes in his game, most doubt, but he's going to be certainly a guy that he comes back. He might be the front runner for Pac-12 Player of the Year. He goes pro. He might have his way to move up into the first round, or he might not get drafted. It's going to be a tough spot for him this offseason to figure out what to do next.
Matt Bream joining us from Louisville. Matt, final minute of regulation. You know, it's still a 3-point game in favor of Virginia, and you have a couple of sequences. One being Virginia running it late into their shot clock, and then a guy slips open late down underneath the basket, wide open for a layup to go up by five. And then after that, Oregon trailing by three and an apparent tie-up for a jump ball with possession to Oregon, though it's called a foul, goes against the Ducks, and UVA gets free throws again. What did you see on those two sequences?
Yeah, the basket by Virginia, there was a double team that was there, and Oregon executed it, and then for just whatever reason, the two defenders let a guy kind of split them and got through and found the open player. The defensive rotations didn't move as well to kind of protect themselves from that. And so, you know, Altman said post-game that that was just a defensive lapse and just a terrible time for it because they got the player that they wanted. They double-teamed and trapped, and the next thing you know, the double team was split. The defensive rotations didn't move quick enough, and the guy was wide open for a dunk. And that was the backbreaker, getting it, you know, a five-point lead with about, 90 seconds or 2 minutes to go in the game. You know, Virginia, they milk the clock every time down basically to 1 or 2 seconds on the shot clock. And then the foul call, that happened right in front of me. And I thought that DeAndre Hunter of Virginia, I thought he traveled before he got tied up. And then I thought the tie-up came before the foul call happened. And, you know, unfortunately for Oregon, neither of those plays were called. And the fact of the matter is Oregon had their opportunities before that moment to tie the game. So you can't just throw the onus on the referees of costing Oregon that game. They had their chances plenty of times in the last 3 or 4 minutes to take the lead, to tie the game, to get within one, whatever you want to describe it. They had their chances, and they just couldn't execute before that moment. But, yeah, that was just an unfortunate situation for Oregon as well.
Now, if you're trying to parlay this momentum into next year, if you are Dana Altman, thinking about the personnel that's coming back, of course, there's questions with a lot of these guys and their futures, Lou King being one of them. But even Lou aside, Matt, what kind of clarity can you give us in terms of what Oregon will either likely return or should most definitely return and their recruiting class? Are there one or two names that you think could be impact players on this squad in the 2019-20 season?
Sure. You have to look at Bol Bol as a guy that's gone. You know, he's not coming back to school. He said basically as much on Instagram and on Twitter when he went to confirm his injury news in early January. So you have to get beside the fact that he's gone, even though he's just played 9 games. Lewis King, Kenny Wooten, Peyton Pritchard. If I was a Duck fan, I would prepare myself for all three of those guys to declare for the NBA draft and not sign with agents, which then opens the door for a potential return. I wouldn't be surprised if one of those guys ends up staying in the draft. And if I had to pick one, it would probably be Lewis King. I do think, though, that there is a strong chance that he comes back to school. I think there's a lot of ground that he could make up in this draft, and it's going to come down to what does he want? Does he want to play in the G League for a year or two and work his way up and get development there, or does he want to play in college? I think he's probably the most likely to go. But I would, if I was a Duck fan, I would expect those three guys to test the waters. And look, if I was Dan Allman, I would tell all three of them to test the waters. And this is a rule change that happened a couple years ago. The NBA and the NCAA came to an agreement that said that, you know, college athletes now can declare, they can go do team workouts, they can go through the combine, they can meet with NBA representatives and get legit feedback of where they are on draft boards, where their strengths are, and where they need to improve, and then straight up be told, hey, you need to go back to school, or hey, you are good enough, stay in the draft. Get that information. That's invaluable. And so Oregon fans and college basketball fans need to get used to that. I think two of the three probably come back. And as for your recruiting, they've got a top 10 recruiting class coming in. Third straight year, Dan Altman has signed a top 12 recruiting class. Second straight year, top 10 class. So it's going to be headlined by Chris Duarte, the number one junior college transfer in the country. He's a guy that can play four positions. He can play point guard all the way to Oregon's power forward spot when they go small. He's 6'7". From one of the best junior college programs in the country, Northwest Florida State, a school that produced the former Duck, Elgin Cook. And his junior college coach says it's very similar player to what Elgin Cook was like. They've also got three other four-star top 100 recruits coming in, most notably C.J. Walker, who's a 6'9", you know, kind of a hybrid between a Kenny Wooten and a Lewis King, a guy that's very freaky athletic, very long, can block a lot of shots, but he's also a decent outside shooter, similar to what King is like. And who's left on the board? There's a couple guys left. Cassius Stanley is a four-star guard out of California area. Fans of the West Squad Invitational up in Portland are familiar with that name. He played there this past winter. He's got Oregon in his top group. It's UCLA, Kansas, and Oregon. He's kind of waiting to see what UCLA does. But a lot of people think Oregon's maybe the one or the second school on his list. And then there's five-star Cole Anthony, a combo guard, son of NBA player Greg Anthony. He's actually born in Portland, so he's got some kind of a tie to the area. He's looking at North Carolina, Oregon, Notre Dame, Georgetown. I think Wake Forest is also in there. But the main two players there are Oregon and North Carolina. And he said that he wanted to see what each team was like from a developmental standpoint in the last third of the season. And he also is waiting to see just what kind of each roster looks like and what team presents an opportunity to make a deep run into March. And then there's going to be grad transfers. Oregon's always in that market. They're always a player there. They're always going to be out checking for transfers. I wouldn't be surprised if they find one, maybe two guys there. There's an international prospect that they're involved with as well. That's a wing player. So Van Altman said that they've got some scholarships to use, and they'll wait to see what the current roster of guys decides to do. And from there, they'll make the decisions of where they go next. So it's going to be an interesting spring, certainly, no doubt, that they've got some options on the table.
Yeah, we'll be monitoring all of it. We'll be following your work as well. And Matt, before I let you go, now that you've seen that Louisville regional up close, what do you make of the Purdue-Virginia matchup with a Final Four spot on the line?
You know, I felt like watching Purdue-Tennessee that Purdue was going to beat no matter who came out of Virginia, Oregon. Their offense was insane. The shots that they made was unbelievable. But then I saw Virginia's defense and just how sound it was, and they didn't just make mistakes. And you know, their offensive efficiency was pretty spectacular as well. So I'm thinking that game is going to be one of the better games in the tournament. It's going to be a clash of styles. You know, Purdue's an offensive juggernaut. Virginia is, you know, they're efficient offensively. They're one of the best teams efficiency-wise offensively in the country. But they're known. Their bread and butter is defense. So it'll be fun to watch. And you know, I'm stuck here in Louisville till Sunday. And so I'm going to go watch that game. It's going to be a heck of an outing. And I can't wait to see how it plays out.
Matt Preem. Follow him on Twitter at Matt Preem. Matt, appreciate the time, the terrific, detailed, informative coverage all season long. And thanks for joining us on the Bald-Faced Truth. Enjoy Louisville while you're over there for the weekend.
Hey, I appreciate it.
There he is, Matt Preem. Follow him on the tweet machine, at Matt Preem. We wrap it all up on a Friday, coming up on the BFT. We're going to bring it back. Got to bring back best thing that happened today, because I got a good candidate. By the way, thanks to JC letting me fill in for him in the chair. You know, when he's on the road, that means things are happening. Ducks, obviously, in the tourney. You got Duck women trying to make the Final Four. You got Blazers playoffs. That begins April 13th. Obviously, there's been a bit of a damper on that, but There'll be moments where JC's going to be here, obviously, most of the time. But when he's on the road, that means narratives are moving. Things are happening. All right. Best thing that happened today. No benchmark, right, Bobby? No benchmark.
No benchmark. You can sing.
And you can sing. Now, Adriana, did you, can you sing this?
Absolutely not. I do have a clip of Samson and John singing it.
That's what I was looking for. Do you have that?
Yeah, it's in my folder. I'll find it.
Okay. We'll give you a moment to track that down. See, that's what I was looking for. Yeah, Samson and JC, I think, did the...
Yes, I've heard it. It's fantastic.
Is it good? Okay, good. The ears need candy. Meanwhile, I dropped the not-so-subtle hint that I was asking the listening audience a very simple question.
I'm not looking for any affirmation. Maybe a little bit. But I asked if they thought I was funny enough to try stand-up comedy. And Nick Cody chimes in and says, "Don't hold off, Judah, newbie. The stand-up world needs the noob." I don't know if the noob would be a good stage name or not, but I will steer into that skid. Klutz Conroy says, "Nice plugs there. You're hilarious. That was classic subtle hint. LOL." Aha! Aha! Jen Kirkman saying that she has my people. I have two. Alabama Adriana, do you think I could hold my own for, let's say, 3 minutes stand-up comedy?
I think that is one of the hardest things to do. Okay, so if you could do it, that would be awesome, but I don't know.
All right. You have that clip?
I do have it.
Okay, let's run it. Let's run it.
Best thing that happened today. Best thing that happened today.
That is awesome. Best thing that happened today. Let's go around the room. Bobby, best thing that happened to you today?
Well, the best thing I heard to happen today that I heard was the fact that they opened up the 300 level at the Moda Center, and they got 11,000 people at least that are going to make that game tonight. I think that's fantastic.
Showing up and showing out. I'll be there tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. Ducks and South Dakota State. Alabama, Adriana, best thing that happened to you today?
It just happened. We had a caller call in, and they told me that I should read books for Disney, or like have my voice be like a Disney character or something because of how it sounds.
You do have a very nice voice.
That is just the nicest thing I have ever heard.
I
love that.
Yeah, you can't really hear that enough, especially in radio. I mean, I think that's a very affirming thing. The best thing that happened to me besides two people telling me that I am like semi-funny, the best thing that I saw was, and I'm trying to track it down on the tweet machine here, but Yusuf Nurkic put out a tweet and an Instagram post basically saying that surgery went well. Thank you to everyone that supported him through this process, and that he's going to be in high spirits trying to make a full recovery. Bless you, Yusuf, everything you mean to Rip City and the Blazers. Find a podcast of this show when you can. Enjoy yourself some madness. This has been The Baldfaced Truth.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from The Baldfaced Truth.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of The Baldfaced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to The Baldfaced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.